The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ormudu, and welcome to Health Chat. Ovarian cancer. Most women don't learn about this cancer until they or a loved one receive a diagnosis. Hollywood actress Angelina Jolie spoke about her personal concerns and how she's taking some steps to prevent the disease. Her story brought to the forefront the issue of ovarian cancer and resonated with women around the world. Tonight, we will discuss ovarian cancer and hear a woman's personal story on fighting the disease. Joining us here in the studio is Voice of America's TV producer, Clara Frank. Clara is a survivor of ovarian cancer and a dear colleague. Clara, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for asking me, Lenore.
It's great to have you here. Also joining us on the phone from Johannesburg is Magdalene Segin, head of advocacy with the Cancer Association of South Africa, CANSA. Ms. Segin, welcome to the show.
Good evening, and good evening to the listeners and everybody in the studio.
Good evening to you again. Also joining us via phone from the United Kingdom is Abby Bego, project manager with the Ovarian Cancer Action. Ms. Bego, thank you so much for joining us from the UK.
Thank you very much.
And let me just mention, I don't know if one of you has her radio or a computer on, but there is an echo. If you could please turn it down so that we don't hear the echo anymore. If one of you is listening live to the show, you may want to lower the volume because we're still hearing an echo. Thank you so much. So let me remind our listeners, if you would like to participate in the program, you can email us your question at healthchat@voanews.com. And we will start discussing ovarian cancer in a moment. But first, as I mentioned, our colleague Clara Frank is here, and Voice of America's Kim Lewis spoke to her about her experience. Let's take a listen.
For Clara Frank, 2013 was unlike any other year of her life. Clara, who is in her 40s, lives in Washington, D.C. She learned that the nagging health problems that she was experiencing were symptoms of a bigger problem that was proving tough to identify.
I realized that the first real symptom that I had was extreme exhaustion. And when I say extreme exhaustion, I'm not saying feeling a little bit sleepy. I mean, it was the kind of exhaustion where I could not keep my eyes open. I was falling asleep at my desk. So I consulted with a doctor, and I was diagnosed with narcolepsy. He put me on some stimulants that worked for a little while, but then the exhaustion would come right back.
After a while of dealing with the exhaustion, Clara said the area around her abdomen began to swell. She said she became depressed because her stomach was getting so large that her mother asked her if she was having a baby.
I tried every kind of diuretic. I tried every kind of natural remedy. I also started to develop intense pain in my neck and my shoulders and in my knees to the point where I couldn't crouch down easily. So I went to see a rheumatologist thinking that maybe I had arthritis or maybe even fibromyalgia.
The doctor then took x-rays and determined a minor case of osteoarthritis in her neck, but could not determine the cause of her swollen abdomen. So he then referred Clara to a gastroenterologist.
I started to develop a brutal gastric reflux problem. I couldn't keep anything down. My esophagus was just burning raw because of all the gastric acid that was coming up continuously. So finally, he ordered a CT scan. And at that point, I had gone on the internet. I took a look at my symptoms, and all of them pointed towards ovarian cancer.
There is presently no early detection test for ovarian cancer. In the meantime, women like Clara, who have been diagnosed with a disease with a poor prognosis, will continue to seize life and seize the day. I'm Kim Lewis reporting from Washington.
And that was Kim Lewis, VOA's reporter. Clara, thank you again so much for being willing to share your story. It has to take some courage to really come forward and speak about this, given what you went through. Before we go deeply into the different steps and up until where you are now, how do you feel right now? Just give us a sense of where you are at this point.
I feel very, very good. I just went to see my oncologist last week. I had a blood test, my CA125. My tumor marker reading is even lower than it was 3 months ago when I had the test done. So I'm feeling very, very good. And also, I just started hormone replacement therapy again, and I'm feeling very energetic as a result of that. So I feel very, very good.
That's great. It's really good to hear this. And now let me come to you, Abby, in the UK. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We heard Clara's story when she was trying to really figure out what was wrong. Apparently, she was misdiagnosed a couple of times, perhaps, I may say. Now, is this typical with ovarian cancer where it is very difficult to diagnose?
Yeah, unfortunately, she's not alone. This is very, very typical in ovarian cancer. And the reason for that is that, as you probably have worked out, that the symptoms for ovarian cancer can be quite vague and quite nonspecific. So stomach pain and bloating. And a lot of times people don't realize or recognize the importance of these symptoms. And on top of that, sometimes doctors themselves find it hard to diagnose ovarian cancer because symptoms are very vague and specific. So it can be very, very difficult to diagnose because of this.
So then what do we have as of today to do so? She had a CT scan done, yeah. I believe. So is it the only way or are there other tests?
Well, I mean, the main thing that we try to get across is for people to understand the symptoms, first of all. So understand what the symptoms of ovarian cancer are, which are persistent tummy pain, mm-hmm. persistent bloating, difficulty eating, and needing to urinate more frequently. And the key thing about the symptoms is that they're persistent and they're frequent. So we say if you have these kind of symptoms for more than 12 days in a month, then visit your GP. So once you get to the GP, usually what they will do is they'll probably do a bit of physical examination, and then they'll do the CA125 blood test, which was mentioned previously. And if that's raised, what they'll then do is a pelvic ultrasound scan. And the pelvic ultrasound scan would allow them to determine whether there are any abnormalities in the ovary. And then if they suggest that there are any abnormalities in the ovary, then they'll go on to do further testing.
And you mentioned GP being general practitioner.
Yeah, sorry. In the UK, GP is a general practitioner, so okay. We all see our GPs. But okay. Your family doctor, you basically go and visit your family doctor. Yeah.
Okay. Now, do we have Magdalene there? I think we lost her earlier. Magdalene, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for joining us from Johannesburg. Now, talk to us about the incidence of ovarian cancer where you are. In a general sense, we mentioned the fact that it is challenging to really diagnose women, for women to know about it, even awareness to some extent. What is the situation in South Africa?
In South Africa, ovarian cancer, the lifetime risk for women is 1 in 394. But having said that, for over many decades, ovarian cancer have been called a silent disease because when there are abnormalities or anything happening in the pelvis that is unusual, normally it is not very easy to diagnose what could be happening. So the risk factors for ovarian cancer are, affected by several factors. And the development, of ovarian cancer is also very significant in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutation, the people that have the faulty gene. Mm-hmm. So, The symptoms could be, having feeling of heaviness, flatulence, pain, backache, etc.
Yeah, we went over some of the symptoms, and they are so similar with other other issues that women have, and that can be very tricky. Now, let me come to you, Clara. After you were diagnosed, what was the first step? What did the doctor tell you in terms of what to do next?
Well, the first thing that he did, I was actually diagnosed with malignant ascites by a gastroenterologist because my abdomen was so enormous and I was having such terrible digestive problems. So what he did, and he was actually the one who ordered the CT scan.
Okay.
So then he drew some of the fluid out of my abdomen and had it tested, and it was malignant. And at that point, he referred me to an oncologist, a chemo-oncologist.
Okay.
The chemo-oncologist took a look at my CT scan results. He took a look at my blood test results. And he then referred me to a surgeon who wanted to get me into surgery immediately. I saw her on a Tuesday. She wanted me to go to the hospital that Thursday. And I managed to convince her to let me give me a reprieve of a week so that I could get my affairs in order at home. My husband was away on business, so I had a few things to do around the house.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, I was just trying to put off
yes.
the inevitable, because when you first hear the word cancer,
it's very scary.
The diagnosis is so terrifying that you are literally frozen in fear.
Yes.
And at that point, it's almost kind of a blessing to have doctors just shepherd you along and tell you what to do so that you don't have too much time to sit around turning over this terrible diagnosis in your mind. And especially when it's a diagnosis like ovarian cancer, where the prognosis is so poor. If you go on Google and you look up, if you Google the terms ovarian cancer and malignant ascites, the words that you will see just in the Google summary on the main page are, you know, lethal, deadly, you know, poor prognosis, poor life expectancy. So it's frightening. It's really terrifying.
It is. I can only imagine. And Ms. Bagel, is it because a lot of time it's detected late?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we find that in most cases, ovarian cancer is diagnosed at a late stage. So I think roughly, especially in the UK, at least I can quote for the UK, roughly in the UK, about 60% of patients will be diagnosed at stage 3 or 4. And at that stage, the cancer has spread. It's affecting other organs. And this makes it very, very difficult to treat. So that's a part of the reason why survival rates are not so good. But on top of that, a lot of cancers develop resistance to chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And then that, again, compounds the issue. So it makes the cancer very, very hard to treat.
Now, we've seen, Magdalene, that with Clara's, in Clara's case, she had the assistance of doctors and people that were really guiding her in terms of the different steps of her treatment. In South Africa, specifically, what is available to help women that are being diagnosed with either ovarian cancer or even cancer in general, other types of cancer?
Is that question for me?
Yes, Magdalene. Yes, go ahead, please.
I can hear you. I don't hear you very well. You're breaking up all the time. I am so sorry.
It's okay. Let me repeat my question. I was asking what is available in South Africa to help women through the diagnosis and treatment. Clara mentioned how she was blessed to have all the assistance she needed, the medical assistance. What about in South Africa? What is the case there?
The types of diagnostic material we have, you know, there are CT scans. There's also a blood test that is specifically done to detect ovarian cancer, and that is it's called the CA125 blood test. It's a protein, and it exists in greater concentration in cancerous cells. So the doctors look at that, and also there are other blood tests. If that is not definitive, then they can do other blood tests, which is called the over one blood test. And then, of course, we have CT scans, and there's a computer, the PET scans or a barium enema or magnetic resonance imaging, what we call the MRI.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So basically, you are well equipped.
Quite a lot of ability for that in South Africa.
Okay, so you are well equipped, which might not be the case in some other countries in Africa and in developing countries. Now, let me come to you, Abby. Mm-hmm. We saw Angelina Jolie, the Hollywood actress, who came out about her situation. She talked about the BRCA1 genes that is mutating.
Yeah.
Now, what is this exactly? Are there different types of ovarian cancer? And why is this one specifically so that she needed to get a surgery to prevent it?
Okay, so in about roughly maybe 20% of ovarian cancer cases, they're caused by an inherited genetic mutation, and that's the BRCA gene mutation. Now, this gene mutation basically increases risk of developing ovarian cancer. So if people that have the BRCA gene mutation will have roughly about an 80% chance of developing breast cancer and roughly a sort of 30 to 60% chance of developing ovarian cancer. So because they sort of have a very clear picture that their risk is quite high because they have just genetic mutation, then it's sort of advisable sometimes to discuss preventative options if you have this genetic mutation. So you can have a preventative mastectomy, so removal of the breast to prevent your risk, to prevent you developing ovarian cancer, or you can have your ovaries and fallopian tubes removed to prevent you going on to develop ovarian cancer.
Hmm. Okay. Now, Clara, let me have your reaction to the whole story around Angelina Jolie and her steps in doing the surgery and what she did to prevent her possible development of the disease. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I am so deeply grateful to Angelina Jolie for shedding light on ovarian cancer and bringing attention to it, because it is... it's sort of like the stepchild of breast cancer. You know, it doesn't get the attention. It doesn't get the funding. And partly that's because women die so quickly that there aren't a lot of celebrity spokespeople who can shed light on the disease. I think it's interesting because I guess that if I had been in her position, having had two close relatives who died of ovarian cancer and one of breast cancer, I would probably have done the removal of the ovaries first, and then I would have removed the breasts. Obviously, you know, she's a 39-year-old woman. She's still in her childbearing years. I was 48 when I was diagnosed, and I'd never had children. Mm. So for me, I mean, it wasn't even like I was given a choice, but in her case, I can understand why she chose to do the surgeries in reverse order, because I think she probably might have wanted to have more children. Okay. But I think that obviously it's a decision that needs to be made very, very carefully. Mm-hmm. Each woman needs to think very carefully about whether or not to pursue these options. It's a decision that needs to be discussed with the doctor, with family. But I think that in her case, she did something very, very reasonable. And I totally understand that. And I also, I have to say that I'm very pleased that she wrote about how she's going through hormone replacement therapy, because I know that HRT is very controversial, especially if you are predisposed to any kind of gynecological or breast cancer. Mm-hmm. But there is a tremendous relief in HRT. So again, it's a decision that needs to be discussed with a doctor.
And you mentioned that you are doing that hormone replacement therapy.
I was on HRT shortly after I had my surgery, because when you have your ovaries removed, you go through menopause immediately. And instead of easing into it the way you would normally, mm-hmm. You go through it overnight, literally.
Okay.
And the symptoms are horrendous. The hot flashes, the sleeplessness, not being able to regulate your body temperature. So I was not allowed to go on hormone replacement therapy until I had had the BRCA test to determine whether or not I had the genetic mutation, which I don't.
Okay.
So that's when I went on it. And then when the symptoms went away, I stopped using it, and then I went back on it. And I'm very pleased that I did.
Okay. So it's really, each woman is really has to, the approach is individual. It's one woman has her own experience and the treatment might be different from one woman to another.
And also I have to add that I think she might have been a little bit alarmed because after she wrote her, I believe it was 2013 column about having the double mastectomy, mm-hmm. I hate to put it this way because I don't want to make light of it, but there was almost a double mastectomy chic where a lot of women were going to that nuclear option and asking their doctors to do that if there was a chance or if they found a lump, you know, just take both of the breasts off. And I think that perhaps she may have been a little bit concerned that there was going to be a copycat kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely.
So I thought that her new column was very, very wise.
Okay.
That's... Yeah, I mean, I think it's just really important that people understand under what conditions that Angelina had her mastectomy and her ovaries removed. It was because she has a specific mutation, and that should be really why people are considering doing this. And like Carla just said, you know, people should have received a lot of advice around this. If they are concerned that they may have the BRCA gene mutation, they can speak to their doctor about it and see whether it's appropriate for them to be genetically tested. And this will only be dependent on around if they have a family history. So if you have a strong family history of breast and ovarian cancer, then what you can do is speak to your doctor about this and see if it could be that you might have the genetic mutation. And then you'd have sort of genetic counseling, and they can go through everything with you. So it's not something that you would just make a snap decision and do. It would be something that you'd really have to get some counseling around and also a lot of advice from your doctor.
Okay. Magdalene, in your advocacy work, how much emphasis is put on ovarian cancer, given that your organization focuses on cancer in general, on different type of cancer? How much do you emphasize on ovarian cancer, and what type of advocacy, what do you advocate for?
Yeah, as a rule, we don't promote, you know, this life-changing procedure without ensuring that the patient has access to a comprehensive health team in respect of counseling, support after surgery. This includes consulting the loved ones as well and the family before taking this decision. It's quite a very, very life-changing. And as the previous speaker has said, you know, if you have an oophorectomy, then you overnight you go into menopause. So one has to consider all those things, especially, you know, when you are still in your childbearing years. And should a woman decide to have preventive mastectomy due to the strong family history or even an oophorectomy or being a carrier of the BRCA gene, we highly recommend genetic counseling and in-depth consultation with the oncologist, reconstructive surgeons, medical practitioners first, as there are other factors to be considered, as well as the psychological and physical complications that follow such major surgery.
Sure. Now, Abby, when it comes to the Ovarian Cancer Action, what do you do exactly in the UK? What do you focus on?
Okay, so our charity, basically we focus on sort of three main areas. So we have our research center called the Ovarian Cancer Action Research Center. And at our research center, we're trying to understand how ovarian cancer develops, the biology of ovarian cancer, how best to treat it. And we're also really trying to understand why some ovarian cancer become resistant to chemotherapy and how we can overcome that. So we're truly just trying to get a really good picture around the science and the biology of ovarian cancer. So that's one side of what we do. We also raise awareness of the signs and symptoms of ovarian cancer amongst the general public. So we try to empower women and make sure they have enough information about what the signs and symptoms are and what they should do if they're ever concerned. So we encourage women, if they're ever concerned about ovarian cancer, just go straight to their doctor and ask for the CA125 blood test. We also do a bit of campaigning as well. So right now, one of the issues that we're campaigning around is for all women with non-mucinous ovarian cancer to be BRCA tested, because we know that women with that type of ovarian cancer are likely or have a high percentage chance of having the BRCA gene mutation. So those are three areas that we work on. So campaigning, raising awareness, and funding research into ovarian cancer. And we also provide a lot of information for women, so women can call us if they have any particular questions around ovarian cancer, and we can go through those kind of questions that they have.
Okay. Now, Clara, tell us about what your day is like today after going through the treatment and where you are right now. Do you have some specific treatment that you continue to take? How often are you supposed to see the doctor? Tell us about your routine now to stay healthy?
Well, I'm supposed to see my doctor. I was supposed to see him once every 3 months. Now he's asking me to see him once every 6 months.
Okay.
My blood work is excellent. I feel very good. Right after most of the toxic effects of the chemotherapy had worn off, my husband and I bought a puppy. So every day I walk my dog. And that's part of it, too, is the exercise element after you finish treatment. You really do have to move.
What about special diet, perhaps?
No.
No? Okay.
No, nothing. I can eat whatever I like, and it's actually a huge relief following my terrible gastric problems to be able to eat normally. Obviously, you know, I've got a mother who loves to push broccoli and, you know, antioxidant things and blueberries and things of that nature. But no, there's no special diet, nothing of that sort.
Okay. Okay. It's good to hear that things are really in a good place right now. And Ms. Bego, do you have any advice in terms of prevention, you know?
I mean, in terms of giving very specific advice for prevention, sometimes that can be quite challenging to do. So the main thing we say is that women should basically have a healthy lifestyle, so eat lots of fruits and vegetables, maintain a healthy weight. But if you are at risk of high risk of developing ovarian cancer, so i.e. you have a strong family history of breast and ovarian cancer, we recommend that you go and visit your doctor and get advice around what this might mean for your risk. Also, women, as you get older, your risk of developing ovarian cancer increases. So we just recommend that women who, as they get older, they're just more aware of the signs and symptoms, and if they ever notice any symptoms whatsoever, that they go straight to their doctor as well. But generally speaking, we know that if you have a healthy lifestyle, you can reduce your risk of not just ovarian cancer, but all cancers. And there are other tiny sort of risk factors for ovarian cancer. So we know that women who delay having babies or who have not had children, a slightly increased risk of developing ovarian cancer later on in life. Women who have not breastfed, a slightly increased risk of developing ovarian cancer. And women who smoke, a slightly increased risk of developing ovarian cancer. And women who are overweight. So basically, stop smoking, maintain a healthy weight. If you have the option to breastfeed, because that might help reduce your risk of developing both ovarian and breast cancer. Yes, I think that's in a nutshell.
And let me add to that one other unusual high-risk, extremely high-risk group is Ashkenazi Jewish women who have a very high incidence of breast and ovarian cancer. So that's something else to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's associated with the BRCA gene mutation. So the Ashkenazi Jewish population are more likely to develop or have the BRCA gene mutation.
Okay.
And so if you're from an Ashkenazi Jewish population and you have a family history, then it's really important that you speak to your doctor about that as well.
Okay, and we're going to wrap up very soon. But Ms. Sagan, quickly, would you tell us how people can have more information about your organization?
On our cancer website, which is www.cancercansa.org.za, we have fact sheets on ovarian cancer.
Okay.
We also have many other reproductive organ fact sheets that one can access.
All right. And Ms. Bego, what is your web address, please?
Yep. So people can find us at ovarian.org.uk, or they can email us at info@ovarian.org.uk.
And a quick message from you, Clara, to women, very quickly.
Listen to your body. If you feel that something is wrong, then by all means, get it checked out before, you know, it's too late.
Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, Lenore.
And thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us. My name is Lenore Moudou with producer Jackson Vunganyi from Washington. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.